everyone, and welcome to this edition of Your Music, Your Way, the powerful path of sound improvisation for accessing innate genius and liberating your unique and precious gifts. I'm here today with a new friend, Bryony Greenhill, and I'm really excited to engage in this conversation with her today. Welcome, Bryony.
Oh, thanks, Daniel. Thanks for having me.
So this whole idea, this summit emerges out of this idea that reality is actually much stranger than we usually tend to think. You know, we've known for 100 years or so, physics has been telling us for 100 years or so that energy and matter basically bounce back and forth, and that reality is comprised of this completely improbabilistic and unpredictable nature. But now we're really feeling it, now that we're in our homes, and this is being recorded just a few days before the summit actually begins. And so we're all in our homes and we're looking at a completely different way of approaching ourselves and our families and our friends and our connections and the physical world. And so this summit is really an opportunity to bring some wisdom together, to look at the different ways of navigating the unknown in a way that brings more of ourselves to the game, so that we can access more of our creativity and our flexibility and our willingness to step into the unknown as if it's not just something to avoid and try to work around, but it's actually the nature of the reality that we live in, and how to use sound and improvisation as tools that can help us to do that. And so Bryony is here today to talk with us about her approach to that. And I'm really delighted about this. She teaches and records and performs improvised vocal music in the US and the UK. Her students have called her the Rolls Royce of singing teachers. That's pretty cool. And a master, and that her work is life-changing. She has released two completely improvised albums working with a variety of wonderful collaborators, and is currently producing a studio album and has improvised an album about paradigm shift that's ready to release later this year. She loves improvisation, and she's here to talk with us today about loving the void, the journey to potent duetting with the unknown. So this is going to be super fun. Welcome again, Bryony.
Oh, thank you, Daniel.
So I'd love to hear a few of your thoughts about, you know, or your early influences. How did you originally, kind of, what were some of the early sparks in you and your life around that sort of led you in this direction?
I think I probably came out the womb improvising. My first recorded improvisation, I'm 4, and you know, we'd make tapes for grandpa on the cassette tapes called Family Noises, and so I would just press record and just sing all this stuff to him.
That's great.
Yeah, my parents, both singers, like not professionally, but keen choral singers. So tons of singing around the house. What age are you talking about? You know, then it was Madonna. I was like 5 years old and covered in lace and bopping around the garden being a material girl.
So it's always been easy and natural and just joyful, sounds like.
You know, I think it was like that as a child, and it's like that now as an adult. I think there was a long period where singing, you know, I've been a performing solo singer since I was 11 years old, but there was a long period where a self-consciousness, a fear set in, and it was pretty uncomfortable to be on a stage and be heard. And I think then it was when I was in India about 10 years ago, discovering improvised music for the first time, and music that was improvised in a formal way. I think in Britain, in my original music culture, let's say my first music culture, either improvisation just wasn't a thing, or it was this very uncared for thing at the peripheries. You know, and it might, if you're lucky at a certain time of night, it might happen around a campfire at a festival. But it wasn't something that anybody put front and center. Whereas in India, I discovered people who were putting improvisation front and center, calling it sacred, practicing for 26 years before they got on a stage, and then sending the audience into this state of transcendence, literally changing our state of consciousness, dissolving us in bliss. And then putting us down again for the end of the concert, we could all go home in our own bubbles, you
Without
know?
walking out in front of cars and stuff.
Yeah, right. So that just had me at hello, basically, for like forever. So once I had these pieces, like the spirituality and the improvisation, taking improvisation seriously, I was off, and it took over my life, and it hasn't let up yet.
So great. So I love your title, Loving the Void, the journey to potent duetting with the unknown. That sounds pretty rich.
Yeah, well, should we dive in?
Sure, why not? Why
Okay.
not?
I use this word, the void, a lot in my teaching. I suppose it's my starting place for my music is to settle in to the emptiness, the listening, the not knowing, and to be very curious about then what comes. And then how it changes moment by moment, what it wants to be moment by moment. And it was quite a training to get to that. You know, I used to walk around the studio, like listening to the air, like, what's the song in the air? You know, and I'd start to hear it and I'd start to let it out of my mouth. It was like a song that would, you know, like the music you hear when you're dreaming and you wake up and you like try and catch it, but you kind of can't. So I'd hear it and then I'd start to sing it, and very quickly, because I've been a songwriter since I was a kid, right? I'd very quickly sort of Brianyize it and sort of bring it down to human level. And I learned to then just abandon it, let it go, and walk around a bit more, listening to the air, like what's the air got? And the next bit would come. And I became more and more able to stay in that state of openness and listening and following and listening and following and not need to make it known, not need to make it solid. And so that's now how I work as a musician. That's where whole songs come that way. And they're the songs of now, they're the songs that reflect a moment, serve a moment. And if I'm in front of a group of people, those songs come from, I would say they come from our field, right? They come from what we're all in together, the kind of collective atmosphere of the thing. And so when I work with students, it's really that void, that emptiness, that not knowing, that is often one of the scariest things for them to relax into at first. And it was a different scene, but I was at an event. We were doing a Joanna Macy, I can't remember what it's called, but like a spiral of grief and anger and fear and love. The truth mandala. And this dude who works for Google came in the
Just did that
middle.
a couple of weeks ago, actually.
Oh, cool. How, well,
Yeah.
how, I want to know how it went, but I
Good
guess that
stuff.
would.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
So doing it, and a dude from Google got in and he picked up the object of sadness and he said, he went into the toilets at work a couple of weeks ago and wept for working in such a soulless environment. And he said, and when I face how kind of empty things are, or how soulless things are, he said, I quickly invent another plan. He's like, and I just seem to kind of leap from plan to plan. And I don't, and he's like, the thing I can't do is just let go and be in the void. And it was when I was like, bing, I was like, oh, this is, he's avoiding. He's like, not a to avoid. Avoiding the void. And then he was kind of doing this dance as he was doing it. I was like, oh, he's dancing around the void. This is a void dance. This is avoidance. He's dancing around the void. He's hopping around it, like not just inhabiting it. And I suppose, I mean, to just download everything at once, I suppose, a mixture of vision quest, time in Native American communities, initiation, rites of passage. I've cultivated a very earth-based spirituality where I feel sort of in the family of belonging with all things, with all of life. And so I now see it as like, oh, when we quieten down and we listen, it's like we start to hear the song of the family of all life. We start to hear the song of the bigger dance that we're all in. And it's kind of the coolest, it's like the portal. It's like the coolest place to go. So it's like my heart goes out for these people who are terrified of it. Because it's like, oh no, you don't need to do the avoidance dance. You can just settle in and learn to listen and follow it. And it's usually pretty awesome. For me as a singer, is much better than anything I try and compose. If I like sit down and now I will compose it, forget it. It's just not worth anything, really. But when I open, I listen, I follow, well, then we have something that I feel is worth sharing.
So wonderful. Love that that whole journey you just took us on, and I love the way that you tie our spiritual experience as human beings to the ways that music is a, sometimes I'll call it a metaphor and a method to assess whether or not I am in the flow. And if I'm sort of doing this trying thing, sometimes I don't even know I'm in this trying thing. I'm just in this, the trying is the sea that I'm swimming in. And so I'm trying to write or I'm trying to play music, but I can tell pretty quickly whether it actually sounds musical or not, whether it's has beauty or whether it has authenticity in it. And that's such a good, it's good feedback. It's like, oh, this actually, I've been playing here for 5 minutes, but it actually kind of sucks and I'm kind of bored with it. And and I would hope that nobody ever hears that. But then when you are doing something that's really in the flow and is a natural expression of your truth and your whether it's painful or whatever, if it's just true, then it's like, wow, that was really beautiful. And it's a good barometer.
Yeah, well said.
So you when you when you are working with people and you are kind of in this point of like what there's a couple of things in my head and one of them that I'm thinking is this point of where it starts to get into too vulnerable and it's too scary and you sort of jump from plan A to plan D because plan B and C are feel too deep and too vulnerable. That feels to me like so much of what so many of us do. It's just so hard to step into unknownness and into a void. I love that a void. And if there's anything that I would love for this summit to do, would be to encourage people to allow themselves, to allow us, and for me to allow myself to drop in a little bit more deeply and to just drop in a little bit more deeply and let life be what it is and allow myself to just feel and to just be just allow reality and allow my own truth to be.
Yeah. Thanks for saying that, Daniel. Yeah, it's like building a culture of support for vulnerability. And as you spoke, I had this image of, have you ever done a parachute jump?
Four, I've done four.
You done four? Okay, I've done two. I had this image of like,
I've done five. I've done five. Can't
oh.
forget that.
Yeah, one, but I kind of forgot that time I jumped.
You've done two.
I done two, and I had this image of people jumping out of, because with a static line parachute, you're attached to a line that then pulls your chute open. I had this image of a bunch of people jumping out the plane, all attached to each other. So one person jumps, and other people start to jump, and I think creating a culture of support for vulnerability is like that. Once we establish, and I think as leaders, we have to establish that we're willing to receive the tr our students' truths, and that we're not going to shame them, we're not going to ridicule them, we're not going to tell them off. Once we establish that, make that clear, and we also ask the group to be kind and to not shame, ridicule, or punish one another, you know, and then people start to realize that they can be vulnerable and they can sort of stick with plan A, so to speak, stick with the moment and its song, even if it's a very vulnerable song. And sometimes it takes a few days to learn this, sometimes it takes a few hours, sometimes it takes the best part of a year. For people to realize that they can share their truth, and then it's usually like love food that like that's what makes a group fall in love with one another, once they all start seeing each other's humanity more deeply, each other's vulnerability, and often it comes through the song. That's when we see behind the mask, and then we can love that stuff. It's very, very love-making bits of us. But I think we, you know, none of us, well, hardly any of us probably grew up in that kind of culture, you know, school or what have you. We did get told off, we did get shamed, we did get teased or whatever. So we learned, oh, that's private. That's too tender to show in public.
Yeah, and through that training that we had, so much of it was about, this is the way to be, whether it's, being, excelling in school, or to be this particular way with your group of friends, or to be with this particular way with your parents. It's like there is a way to do things, and then there's not the way to do things. And if there's anything about me that is kind of this not part, then I can't allow that to even exist. And so I'll shove that into the background, and then when we're later in our lives, we end up feeling a lot of shame around that, and it can be even hard to discuss with a friend.
Right. You talked earlier about movement practice, and I think for me, between like private studio time improvising with my voice and being on the dance floor and dancing alone in the studio, it's where I've gone kind of under the bridge and found the trolls, you know, the parts of me that I disowned at various ages that then kind of live like a troll under the bridge. They're still alive, but nobody's visited them. They haven't had a shower in 25 years. Barely fed, you know, so they're grotty, and you have to go visit with them and love them. And I think, you know, what I find sad about this is, you know, the point where I realized, oh, it's a kind of collection of things that for me as an English middle class white woman, what got told it wasn't welcome was my body, my emotions, my wildness, my spirituality, my earth-based indigeneity, my sexuality, my all these things. And once I realized, oh, it's a whole package. And actually, it's this friggin' precious package. It's like the most beautiful package. And it made me get fierce, like, right, I'm gonna stick up for those parts of me. I'm gonna stick up for those parts of everybody else. I'm not gonna hide them away anymore. And I'm gonna support anybody else who's hiding those away as trolls under their bridges. And if voice and movement help me go find those trolls and love on them, then maybe this can be medicine for others too. And it seems it can be.
There's when I look at all of this together, and I'm just loving everything that I'm hearing you say. It seems to me that so much of it, one of the things that I've started to think about recently is that and I'm kind of playing with it in different contexts, and that it occurred to me a while back that it may be that life boils down to three questions. And everything boils down to threes, doesn't it? So one is the question number one is, what is happening now? So that's like the place of looking around and trying to figure out what's going on in my environment. I imagine that from the time we were multi-celled animals, there's like this, these feelers that are going on. It's like, what's going on out there? And trying to assess, the environment. And so everything, data collection, listening, paying attention, it's all about like that, what's happening out there. And then the second question is, who am I? And I was as you were talking there, this is what reminded me of this. You spent that time in maybe in your teenage years and early adult years trying to assess who you are, and you sort of realized that there are these parts of yourself that weren't being accepted. And though you're in this process of processing, like, who am I? Who am I in this? What is the I-ness in my experience of existing? And then the third thing is, what do I do next? What do I do now? What do I do? I play this note? Do I chase this squirrel for a meal? Do I run from this tiger? Do I, what do I do now? Now that I've collected as much information as I can, and I've sort of figured out who I am as a, like, what's my truth? Okay, now what do I do with all of that? And then it rolls back around to, okay, now what? When I sang a song, the room changed, and now what? Now what's happening? So I'm fascinated by your process that you've gone through in all of this, and I'm kind of curious if that sort of strikes anything in you as you heard me describe those things.
Well, it's kind of like how I pray. It's like the beginning of the day. It's like I do it the other way around though, to be able to check in with myself. What's happening? How am I doing? How's my body? How's my heart? How's my energy? How's my mind? What do I arrive into this day as? And then the awareness outside, okay, who's around me? Hello, the trees. Hello, the air. Hello, this town. Hello, the world that we live in. Like, what's happening out there? And then, what am I grateful for? And then, what's happening today? What's my intention today? What's my prayer for me today? What's my prayer for the world beyond me today? Okay, that's clear. Give it away. Here we go.
Nice.
It's a nice way of orienting.
So I'm sorry, were you about to say something else?
No, please, you go.
So how do you, sort of stepping back into, like, stepping more maybe into your particular channel, how does vocal improvisation play into your experience of yourself, and why is it, what is it about vocal improvisation that motivates you and moves you and inspires you as you proceed?
It's just so beautiful. It just happens. It's like life without it. It's like life without fruit trees or life without flowers or something. I would equate it to water or something. Like you couldn't live in a world without water. And I think for me, improvised singing is kind of like that water. Like you bring it and it nourishes everything. If I improvise singing it, I feel nourished, and usually the people around me feel fed somehow, nourished somehow. And then, when I see what people do with this work, when I share it with them, and there are a few improv teachers in Britain. I'm one of the main people bringing over methods I learned in what I call the contemporary American tradition. So people like Bobby McFerrin, Rhiannon, Joey Blake, Dave Wurm, what they've been cultivating together for decades. I've been a real student of those people. And so I bring some of those methods over to Britain. And then I was in a quintet for years, still in it. And we then take it in certain other directions. So then I kind of bring all that back to Britain and share it with people. I'm one of the main people espousing these things, like sharing these things, I guess. And when I see, and so most people I share it with are doing it for the first time. And when I see what happens to them, when I say, hey, you don't need a song, you don't need me to tell you what to sing. Like there's something in you that can figure that out moment by moment. It's like they drink the water. It's like they come alive, they get nourished. And then you have a whole circle of people doing that, dropping in, all coming really into their listening so they can really hear themselves. Balancing their awareness, partly with me, partly with you, partly with the whole circle in the room. It's a deep state of presence. And all the music that can come in that, it's really it's kind of my dream that we could have a singing culture again. Like we've gone a little quiet in that respect to some degree. And I think when you have improv, one of the things it lets you do is it like it lets you just jump in and join in. It lets you find a sweet harmony pretty easy. You don't need to know the song. You don't need to have a song. You can just get together with other people and make music. And it's like that's pretty sweet,
And it doesn't
pretty.
require a lot of learning or studying or memorizing.
Right. It's right there. It's good to go. And and you do like a weekend or whatever, and most people by the end of the weekend can do that in a like really attuned way, really often when folks, because I think 'cause we don't have much of an improv culture, so we're not very practiced at it. I think a lot of people when they start off, everybody's just kind of going blah, 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 kind of together, and it's too messy often. So it just takes like a little tweak here and there to start really dropping into kind of more attunement to each other and sort of surrendering to the music of the moment together.
So does this require a lot of times, even when I'm talking with people about piano or this kind of stuff in general, people will say, well, I'm tone deaf, and I my junior high school teacher asked me if I would just lip sync instead of singing. And what do you say to people that come to you with that?
I'm in a real inquiry about this right now. Have you seen the films of Michael Stillwater? Oh, I really recommend them. I've been holding out, having a bit of a rest and watching Michael Stillwater films. One of them's called Beyond the Fear of Singing, and there's a really good shrink in there, a neuroscientist who says, basically, he says you see more kind of Aboriginal cultures or Indigenous cultures, and everybody's singing. And he says, you see us as children, all the kids are singing. And then he's saying it's very common when people have that, oh, you can you lip sync, you shh, don't sing, etc. And he says, our brains are really programmed to survive. So we're always scanning, just like you say, we're always scanning for like what's in my environment and what's gonna help me survive, what's gonna mess me up. And social survival is so important. We need one another as well. We feel with us all cooped up at home, like, damn, we feel our social needs very loudly at this time, So, and I think humans have been around, what, I don't know, 100,000 years, and it's only really in the last maybe 100 years that we've been able to survive alone. With a credit card or whatever. So we need each other emotionally, but for most of our lives, we've really needed each, for most of human history, we've really needed each other to survive. So thus, if we do something that threatens our belonging in the group, we don't. So if we just kind of sing badly one day when we're five and we get that message, and then something in the brain learns, well, I got in trouble that time. That didn't work out so well next time. So it creates a memory, it attaches a memory of like fear of like, don't do that. It's going to threaten your survival. And so then when you try and sing again, if you ever indeed do, that kind of cross
This
circuit
doesn't exactly
comes
help.
out and you can't, yeah, you can't hear, you can't, there's all this just kind of interference in your brain. I my ex-husband, he couldn't sing in tune apart from every song in Rent, the musical. And he would sing Rent, and it was perfect, like perfect, note by note, all the things. And I kind of think whatever happened for him, this kind of disturbance, I think it must have come after Rent, the musical. I don't know. I came younger and he got that. And then those never again will he sing in tune. Okay.
The brain is a funny thing.
But here's the thing, actually, with him, he couldn't note match, right? But he when he would try and sing along with things, he would find a pretty nice harmony. And often with improv, it has enough flexibility in it that, like, you don't have to sing the exact same notes as other people, as long as you can find a pretty nice, you can find something that sounds pretty nice with everyone, sounds pretty good. Yeah.
I think that makes sense to me, and at a lot of different levels. And it does seem like a lot of the idea that the whatever association, you know, happened with any kind of experience, it that very thing gets in the way of our ability to listen and to experiment and to play enough so that I can find that note, and I can allow myself to move through the whatever may feel like shame or, oh, I'm doing this terribly, to get to the point of going, oh, this is where it is. This is what resonates. And it takes that level of being willing to go into the void again and to go into the uncomfortable and to just allow that to be for a little while. And feel that stuff and be able to love it the way you described earlier. So you had mentioned at some point, and I think you do this kind of group singing thing for leadership trainings and for maybe team building things. And does this have anything to do with you know, how does this help in other areas of people's lives aside from just being able to enjoy singing?
It was amazing. When I started to teach, people would come back to me after a while and say, you know, my marriage has got better. You know, my family's got happier. So many people have had babies. Of my students, they'd come back with like new names and new hairstyles, or they would finally go back to their original hair color or whatever. And I'd kind of gradually watch like healthy transformation happening in my students. And go like, huh. And they'd kind of report it back to me, and I'd observe it over time. And what I realized is that the things that are blocking people from improvising and are blocking them from communicating honestly from the heart were blocking them in other areas of their life. Well, they got that unblocked. They got their heart and their voice reconnected again, and suddenly their relationships got better. Suddenly the relationship with themselves got better because they could listen to this, you know. So then when we start applying that to teamwork, right? So, and leadership, what happens if you say, you must do this, or you say, I'm really feeling inspired by this. I'm feeling afraid of this. I'm concerned. If you start to speak from the I statement, from a place of authenticity and honesty, people can resonate with that. You start saying, you, oh dear, you're in trouble, you know. So there's a leadership role about being grounded, being comfortable with uncertainty. Things always change anyway. Sure, we're in this epic corona time of uncertainty, but that aside, we're always in uncertainty. So you get more and more relaxed with that. That makes you more and more able to lead from this place of not being clouded by fear, being able to notice the parts, go, what's happening? Who am I? And what now? What shall I try now? How did that work? You know, you can navigate calmly, and you can communicate peacefully and authentically and very connectively with a very true voice. So that I would say that's the leadership piece. And then with team building, you know, when you come to collaborative vocal improvisation, right, and you're making music together as a group of people in the moment, and no one's in charge, and just listening and following. So it's like cultivating being attuned to me, feeling me, at the same time as being attuned to you, feeling you. And sometimes saying, oh, now the solo's with me, now it's my time to like rock this and bring it, and not hold back, bring it all, bring my whole song, bring the full thing. And that's what lifts the roof off, you know? Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, then when it's not that time for me, and when that energy comes to you, oh, it's Daniel's time. The solo's with Daniel right now, and here I am holding friggin' steady on my part. So you've got something to be supported by while you fly, and you really bring your magic. So how do we form a group of so much co-listening and so much safety and trust that everybody can bring it when it's theirs to bring, hold steady when it's time to hold steady, and really follow the aliveness together and be able to drop into a state of kind of collaborative, emergent, shared consciousness? And I would say that kind of does kind of ultimate teamwork.
That's so beautiful. There's people have these experiences of knowing that sometimes it's totally the thing to do to sit back and place, just be simple and solid, and hold for somebody else. And sometimes it's absolutely the right thing to do to step forward and go, "Why, it's me." Wee-hee! And then
Yeah.
so step back and be solid for somebody else so that they can
Yeah.
have experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's
Like,
so
why it's me, or it's more than that, Danny. I think it's why it's coming through me right now. Like, I feel the heat of it. We had to learn this for, I'm in this quintet, The Elements, and we're a quartet now, actually, but I'm in this ensemble called The Elements. And, in the early days of us working together, when somebody would get the solo, like, kind of from spirit or from the moment, the solo would be with you, they'd kind of give a verse of it and then pull back to a stable part, kind of like conversation, politely saying your piece and then moving back and leaving room for another voice. But then we'd just all sing the pattern together because the energy was still with them, it wasn't with anybody else. And we realized, like, oh, I actually just have to stay true to it. If it's with me, I might just be the soloist for the whole song. And once we learned that, that's when we started to listen to our recordings and realize, oh, we're ready to make an album, because we were able to stay true, stay listening and following to the energy from the beginning to the end of a piece. And that's when the pieces had this coherence, this finality.
I think one of the things that you're touching on there that resonates the most with me is that is what you're saying about listening and really listening and being open, always being open to whatever the isness. You said listening to the air earlier when you were trying to write a song. It's like, what's wanting to happen? Is the way I often will phrase it. It's like, what's wanting to happen right now? And a lot of times I've had that experience is a lot of time with drumming, with drum circles. And we've had a pretty large drum circle in my town in Asheville for many years. And I've been one of the kind of the sort of the core people that's helped, excuse me, hold that circle. And I have this experience of like, what is, sometimes these people over here start to play something, the rhythm starts to get a little wonky because they can't hear each other real well. And so I'm like listening for like the rhythm that is in the center. Like there's people playing different versions of the rhythm. And if I listen to any one of those people, it's a different experience. And I'm not quite as successful helping to hold it together as if I listen to everybody and then listen to the deeper, like where is the core rhythm that's driving the whole thing? And if I can listen to that, and it may be that nobody's playing it right now, but if I can listen for it, even when there's all this noise going on, then I can play that and people can hear that and people can come back. So it's a very subtle,
Right.
but powerful piece of what can make it all work.
Right. And I think you're describing amazing leadership right there. And I think, just technical listening, I find when we begin singing together, or probably it's the same for drumming together, our ears tend to focus on just one or other sound. Most people, we focus on the soloist, or we're really interested in what that person's doing. We zoom in on one. Whereas actually to start broadening our presence, so we can hear all the voices, we can hear all the drums, and then listening for, like, what are they trying to express together? And as you're saying, that ability to listen to the void, listen to the underlying, these levels of listening to the place that it might not be manifest yet in the circle. It's like the potential of where it wants to go, what it wants to be. And the courage to like, and the kind of, and the archetypes of it's kind of magician, right? To feel that, oh, it wants to be this. Like somebody was telling me today about Steve Jobs when he, like, Apple fired him, and then they brought in this guy from, I don't know, Pepsi or whatever, and they had like 600 products and da 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 da, and it wasn't working, and they nearly went bankrupt, and they were like, Steve, will you come back? And he came back, and he's like, what's with these 600 products? It's like he was listening to 600 drummers. I'm able to say, no, wait, there's something what's happening. It's like, no, what was happening is the iPod. It's like, canceled 600, I mean, that's so radical. But he had the listening, and you could feel that, because sometimes, and here's the thing I think that's kind of devastating in our age, the reality is there's tons of organizations doing things that no longer serve. Like, if you work making anything that's basically plastic and disposable, probably 80% of that doesn't serve anymore. If you're working for an oil company, you've got to start thinking of a different route. You've got to let that song go and start listening for what's the song of now. There's so many things that we as humans are doing that are ready to be buried or composted. And luckily with music, it's just so easy. You just stop singing and it's quiet, and then you can give it a bit of space and let a new song come. Unfortunately, when it's a lot of people's livelihoods, it's paying a lot of bills, it's keeping a lot of roofs on and tummies fed, that's a trickier thing to bring those things to an end and then listen for, okay, what life wants to grow now through us. It's scary, right? Already I say that and I feel fear coming into my body, and it's part of the fear that is so real for many of us. I mean, different countries around the world are responding to COVID differently. The British government's saying, cool, we'll pay 80% of your wages. They're doing massive quantitative easing, going into hella national debt to just cover 80% of everybody's wages. But I think a lot of countries aren't doing that, and people are going bankrupt right now. People are without income right now. Some people have savings, some people don't. A lot of people don't. So there's this kind of money survival terror. And I'm personally, I think I'm safe for now. I think I'm covered by the government. But even as I say this, my body starts to feel those kind of cold feelings that I call fear. And it's not just mine, it's collective. So it's terrifying. But you know what's happening around here is people are growing food more. They're starting to do things for each other more. My neighbor just made me shelves for free. I took a lady up to the top of a hill at 6 foot different and started teaching her vocal improv things she could go home and do with her housemates because they were running out of things to sing. Like a kind of a gift economy is sprouting up. I don't know if that's the way that things want to go. People are growing food more. The engineers talking about putting hydro in the river outside. We're just saying, shit, how do we get resilient here? And how do we be generous with each other? And how do we, what if more systems fail?
So I have something that I respond to with my clients about that. You up for a little bit of I don't know. I tend to think when I'm playing music, there's this question that people will have. Well, how do you play the piano? How do you do this thing? And it occurred to me when I was meditating on that a few years ago, when I was creating all this, is like, I think that how is actually an unproductive question. It's this, it's a, it's a, it's understandable why we ask that, because we kind of want to know things, and we want to know things before we start investing a bunch of time and resources in a what could be a dead end if we don't have it sort of figured out. But I think it's much more potentially productive and useful to do, as you were saying, like listen to the air, put some, be willing to go into the void, into the unknown, and to listen, and just be open enough to allow answers to come from places that aren't our own our own, what we know already.
And sometimes there's a stage that has to come before that. Sometimes you need to kind of get your ya-yas out, right? Sometimes you need to go, oh my God, I'm terrified. Where is my money? Where's my income coming from in August or whatever? But then it has its room. So it's done and you're ready to be quiet and be like, boy. And you start, whether you're dancing into it or singing into it or playing the piano through it, like then you find fresh waters come, new narratives come. And in that, you kind of, you find your way.
Beautiful. And that the one of the things that I think is really amazing about the work that you're doing is that it is a pra it's a practice for learning how to live. It's a practice that works because it ends up creating beauty. It ends up creating community. It ends up creating harmony. It ends up creating the kinds of things that we want to create. And it involves innate skills. Like it's already available. I don't have to learn something that's over here. I just have to connect to more what's already in here. And that gives me great hope.
Sometimes when I'm singing, I think, wow, so many things could fall down and that you can't take this away. I mean, you could say we're being called home right now. Like, what have we got right here in our bodies? What can we do? Oh, I happen to be an instrument as well. Geez, I'm a music producer, creator, and just my own body was designed for this. And then, oh, like, like a lot of us are nesting, I've been making my home a bit nicer and connecting more with my neighbors at 6 foot, and okay, what can we do together? And how can we get on? When I say, we can't see our like actual friends, So like, who? And then what is the nature around us got? And what can we grow here? And how's the water? And or is it just like, oh, geez, it doesn't work to live in a city anymore? Well, cities are only like 100 or 200 years old, most of them, at this scale. So most people have been living with a bit more land around them for most of human history. And I think, frankly, what's happening with COVID is kind of a little taste of our fragility, because we start looking at things like climate change and the fragility of fossil fuel-based energy systems and all the rest. It's like, oh boy, how much do things have to change? And possibly quite a lot. Who knows? I think that's our job as humanity at this time to kind of figure that out. And I think if we can listen to each other, if we can grieve, if we can use our voices to move through those harder feelings of fear and sadness and anger and confusion and lostness and shame and feeling powerless or pathetic or all that crap that we usually don't want to feel, we're usually not safe to express. If we start to have the safety to feel that, have the ways to express that, then they're like the stuck rocks. You get them out, and like we've said before, like then the new waters start flowing, and in those waters are like, okay, well, we got this, okay, well, we could do this, and this kind of ingenuity. We're adaptable creatures, we're ingenious. We have so much potency and creativity in us. And when we get good at working together, listening to each other, coming forward when it's our time, supporting others when it's their time to shine and lead, I feel hopeful for us. Even if it all is tumbling down, I feel hopeful for us.
That sounds like something that the Rolls-Royce of teachers might say. That was beautiful. So do you have something that you would like to offer our wonderful listeners today so they can connect with you after this?
Oh, well, I made my first very own improvised album. I mean, very own. It's got tons of other people on it, but I guess I'm the linking factor. It was quite vulnerable because you go into a studio and you have like the recording. Sorry, I'm telling you a story. You just need me to get to the point. Well, you go to a studio and you have the charts and you have the musicians and you have and it costs a hell of money and you have and it sounds like proper music or whatever. Whereas with improvisation, you just have like whatever somebody just happened to be videoing it and boom, they've got the sound line from their thing or like somebody's phone happened to be on. So you have all this really suboptimal sound quality stuff, but damn, you got the sound in there of music being born as it's happening, and you never get that back again. You can never reproduce that. So it's a collection of those. It's a collection of
Cool.
improvisations. I've called it sketches, and it was edgy to release it. Like, what does this feel like to anybody? Because I love it. I really love it. And I didn't know what it was like for anybody who's not me, but apparently other people love it and they feel joy and they cry and they go on a deep journey. So I'm giving it away
That
to
is
your
awesome.
listeners only.
That is
Not
awesome.
really everybody, but to people who've got this far in the symposium and love this stuff and are curious and are connecting and following at home. So there's a URL, which is where they go to download it, but they actually need to contact me to get a bespoke code. So
Okay.
I'm music@brianygreenhill.com is my email. Music@brianygreenhill.com. So you can write and say, hey, I listened to the Your Music Your Way symposium. Can I have a code? I'd love to listen to your album, and I'll
Awesome.
send you a code,
Awesome.
and then you can download it for free.
Thank you for doing that. That's co so cool. I may
Oh.
be one of the, maybe I will be th one of the first people to reach out there and do this.
Oh, I'm touched. Cool. Well, thanks for suggesting it. It's a lovely. He
Cool.
suggests he takes care of you all, everybody. He's like, will you give all the listeners something for free? It's like, oh, it makes me think, what can I give for free? It's like, okay, I can give you my album. So
Is really great.
good prompt, Daniel. It's nice.
That is really great. And you know what I'm hoping happens is that the wisdom that you shared today, it will be just broadly shared. You know that lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of people will hear that and will look in themselves for ways that they can connect more authentically with who they really are and can start giving themselves permission to around the house and to do that online with others and you know who knows what kinds of maybe this is the beginning seeds of recreating the culture of singing around the world so that we can all
May
find ourselves
so.
doing
Oh,
it.
hey, there's one more thing because this is going on at next week for 2 weeks from April the 6th to whatever is 2 weeks after that. Every day at 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. British time, I or one of my peers will be leading a 15-minute sing drop-in. It can
Awesome.
be free, you can do it by donation, it's all cool. There's like the it's called the Daily 10 and 6, it's on Facebook. I should give you the URL for that, maybe you can put it down at the
Okay,
bottom.
we'll put that down there too.
Great.
Awesome.
Yeah, you could come along if you want to. And so 6 p.m. in California is like 6 p.m. in Britain is 10 a.m. in California. So
Okay.
the 6 p.m. one works with you in America.
Which would be 6 p.m., which would be 1 p.m. in North Carolina.
There you go. It's lunchtime. It'd be a 15-minute lunchtime thing.
Right. Love it. Awesome. Well,
Cool.
very good. Well, we will be connecting more, and what a delight to have this conversation with you, and I look forward to more.
Me too. Thanks for all your great questions and so great to talk. And I look forward to more. Thanks for having me.
Good stuff.